One down, two to go. We thank you for being with us here on this Monday. Jason Ross, I'm Damian Barling. This is The Lowdown. Great first hour of the show. Lots to talk about the NFL. Lots to talk about the Raiders and those two quarterbacks, man. Jared Goff and Carson Wentz, the number one and number two overall picks of the 2016 draft, is paying off big time for the Los Angeles Rams and the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll talk more NFL as we continue here, including some of the interesting division leaders out there. We'll get into college football as well. It was sort of a crazy weekend. There's definitely going to be a big shakeup tomorrow night when the second round of college football playoff rankings are released. Also, top of the 2 o'clock hour, we'll have some fun. We'll poke some fun at ourselves, things we got right, things we got wrong. We'll overreact, but not just to things in the NFL, to everything in all of sports. Share your best and worst of the weekend as well. Best of the weekend here. Friday night, Ben Simmons destroys the Pacers. Then Sunday morning, Carson Wentz carves up the NFL's number one defense. No question who this is from.
Yeah, we know where that is. What's up, Marty?
Marty from Philly, yeah. Indeed. Here's another best and worst I wanted to share with you. Did you guys see that monster who is the WBC heavyweight champion, Dante Wilder, this weekend? I've never heard of dude. He's like a real-life Drago, but American. Why is he not getting any run? I wrote back, because he's a boxer. Boxers don't get runs, but if there's one heavyweight that does get some run, it's Dante Wilder. You just have to pay attention. And the way he knocked that young man out on Saturday was just catastrophic.
I felt like there was something up.
Like it wasn't real?
Yeah, I guess because it wasn't the thing that was the only person he hasn't knocked out. So he beat him before? Is that what it was?
Yes.
And then he, like, sprinted over there and then blew him up. Is that what happened? I mean, that's what it looked like. It took, like, 90 seconds. Not even 90, like 10 seconds. And I just felt like something was weird.
I just thought he knocked him into 4 months ago.
Yeah.
Like, he woke up and it was the summer.
Right.
Okay, that's all that I took it as. But if boxing is trying to build something by staging a fight.
Yeah.
Color me shocked.
Yeah, exactly.
Never happened before. What? Say it. What? What is your problem? You're huffing and puffing because boxing is coming up. What is the problem?
No, like, the reason why it didn't look like he wasn't prepared because he wasn't prepared. Wilder's former opponent got popped for drugs. Stiverne was put in there last second, so of course he wasn't ready for that fight.
So boxing is a sham, is what you're saying.
Just like every other professional fighting institution.
That's actually a fact and a good lead-in to my best of the weekend, but we're going to save that for just a few minutes, Jay Ross, because we got to talk about the Sacramento Kings here for a few minutes. No game tonight. They'll play tomorrow here at the Golden One Center. They got the Oklahoma City Thunder, they're struggling. I don't know that they're struggling. I don't know that they know who they are yet. They had a weird one yesterday. We can get into that later. But the Kings played Detroit on Saturday, and it's more of the same.
Yeah. A few things were better, but there's some interesting stats that are now we're getting a little bit farther into the season. It's still very early, but 9 games in gives you a little larger sample size of what's going on. And the thing that's right now jumping out to me is Kings, we know, are not hitting three-pointers. They're not hitting threes. They're not getting to the foul line much, and they're not getting to the rim. They actually lead the league in mid-range, which is a novelty and isn't used anymore. I mean, if people are making threes and getting free points at the free throw line and you're not capitalizing on either of those, you're missing the present-day NBA. And so it's weird that they're number one in mid-range shooting, but last in the other categories. And it's just like,
come on out to the Golden One Center where you can see the league's best mid-range shooting team.
15-foot jumpers are automatic. So they got to get to the rim, which draws fouls. They got to get around the arc, which gets you more points. They're doing, kind of in between right now. But I felt like Saturday was better. They were in the game longer. In the end, it's still 1-8 with a 7-game losing streak.
And to be fair, Detroit is 7-3.
Yeah, it's a good team.
They're another team that we're not paying attention to because it's not Cleveland and it's not Golden State, and it didn't do a big trade like Oklahoma City did, or they weren't on the other end of a trade like the Pacers, who were kind of looking at like why are you winning games, or you're not a laughing stock like we thought you were going to be. like the Brooklyn Nets. Mm-hmm. By the way, Porzingis last night scores like 40.
Yeah.
Knicks win again.
Right. Some of these guys, see, that's where you hope, like, some of your young players with the Kings, or you hope you can turn into some of the things like we're seeing with Porzingis and the Greek Freak and other guys that are developing. But I was thinking about the season so far through 9 games, and you can't undo what's happened, but if they just found a way to win the game against DeMarcus and maybe Phoenix, they're 3-6. That's still not very good, but that's probably about what we think they would be. As through 9 games, about 3 wins, yeah, 3-6, okay. But when you're 1-8, it's just I know it's only a 2-game difference, but man, 7 in a row, and you're just like, when's the next win going to come? Like, you don't think they're going to beat the Thunder. You don't think they're going to beat Philadelphia. They can, but you just don't think of it anymore because they have such a poor record.
You mentioned you saw some things that were different, that were a little bit better. What were they?
The two things that I like right now is they've put Buddy to the bench the last 2 games, and he's performed pretty well there the last 2 games in a row. Now, what I didn't like, he's been the leading rebounder both games. That's not good that he leads the team in rebounding. And I think Garrett Temple in the starting lineup makes a lot of sense. There's just a lot of solid play all the way through for Garrett. So I think that switch has been good. But what this team desperately needs, I think we need to have one night where, and they don't even have to win the game, where we're on the air the next day going, wow, did you see Willie's 28-12? Or De'Aaron went nuts tonight. There it is. That's the game we've been waiting for. 27 points from De'Aaron Fox. Or like last year when we were hanging on to Scal's 31-point game in Phoenix and Willie's big double-double and Buddy had a 30-point game. Just none of those games have happened yet, and I think that's a little bit of a product of the minutes that we talked about last week. But even if you get that sampling where you just mentioned Porzingis scoring 40, all right, that gives fans some excitement of what the potential could be of an individual and certainly of the team, and we haven't seen anything like that.
Is Willie the only 20-point scorer this year?
No, it's Willie had one, Hill
which
had
was
one.
Game one.
Yeah, and Hill was game two, the game they won in Dallas, and then Temple had the
Garrett,
game went nuts.
Right.
But that's 23 has been the highest score in a game
and
this
that was
season.
Garrett,
yeah.
Right, where he
went nuts in the
fourth
quarter. Yeah. But that's basically two veterans and Willie. You know, that's not Scal. Mm-hmm. That's not, you know, Bogdan. Like, if Bogdan hits 7 threes, wow, he scored 28 tonight. I think people would be excited. We just need a night like that for somebody.
He did hit 2 yesterday. He was 6-7 in his 26 minutes. Yeah. Here's a better question. Have we had a 30-minute player
that's
yet?
That's a great question.
And that's only popping in my head because I'm looking at Zach Randolph, who played 29 minutes and 52 seconds.
Yeah.
And just looking at that, I'm thinking, is that the most minutes a Kings player has played this year?
I think there's been a couple 30s, but
I was
not
about
much
to
more.
Say, yeah. Yeah. But it's like 30.
Yeah.
It's not 31 or 32.
And certainly nobody's playing 40.
Right. Oh, yeah. Gosh.
No chance.
Not even close. I'll ask a question that was directed to me on Twitter and that has been circulating around Sacramento Kings fans. The hell is going on with Scal?
Great question. I know Dave Yeager said after the Boston game that it was tough to get him in a matchup with Tatum. He was, you know, didn't want to put him in that spot. Well, then they played Detroit where it felt like they were playing Randolph and 4 small guys, and it was hard to get him in, he said. Well, I thought, well, make him your big guy and play 4 small guys around him. I mean, if you're in a spot where you can't find a position for Scal, this year to me is about growing Scal, growing Willie, growing Buddy, growing Bogdanovich and all the young players. I know Randolph can play, but, you know, I don't feel like the young guys should be slided on minutes.
So what now?
Just keep going. Just keep going. I mean, you know, they don't quit. That's good. Cool. But, you know, you got to keep going and hope that the
improvement
happens.
Are they just
happens.
Not going to make an adjustment this year? Are we talking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7? Are we talking 20-minute players?
I don't know. That's the one I would switch, but that's, you know, I don't know. Until you have an injury and or a trade, I think they're going to continue to play a lot of guys. There's not a lot of separation from the highest level player to the lowest level player, but I think if you fine-tune that to 8 consistently, I think they might get better production.
Would
be better results, though. I don't know.
I loved watching Frank Mason, by the way. Mm-hmm. He didn't have a particularly great outing. I mean, he had 6 assists, but I enjoyed watching him run the point guard.
Yeah, and the reason he played was because Hill was out for mm-hmm. personal reasons. But, like, if Hill was there, I don't think he would have played.
Right.
It's just they are in a little bit of a numbers game. You wish you could trim the roster a little bit maybe to get longer minute run, but it's not happening.
Well, if there was another mid-range jump shooting mm-hmm. team in the league, it might be the Detroit Pistons.
Yeah.
The two teams, 21 and 24, that's a combined, my math isn't that good, that's a combined 45 three-point attempts. That's an average night in Houston.
Exactly. So they might have that at half.
They very well. Yeah. They very well. I think at some point this year they probably will. Speaking of Will, thanks for the call, man. What's happening?
Hey, guys. So I was listening to what you were just saying about what Yeager said about Scal, and I've been real patient, and I understand this process, and I don't have a problem with losing or anything else. We're building a team for the future. However, I have a big problem when you're matching up as a coach with a small team like Boston, because let's face facts, they are terribly undersized now, having lost Gordon Hayward and not really having a true center. Make them match your bigs, man. Slow them down and make them match your bigs. You should have Willie, Skull, and somebody big as a small forward out there. Why are you worried about matching them? That's not. Now I have a problem with Yeager's coaching. If he's playing to match other teams, he's not coaching appropriately. A coach should be making the other team match you. You know, tell me if I'm wrong, but I mean, I played ball for 40 years. It's, you know, you try to exploit matchups. You try to create matchups for the other team to have to match you, not the other way around. Otherwise, you're playing catch up.
Will, we appreciate you, my friend. Thanks for the call, man. And most of all, thank you so much for listening. Text here at 44-11-40 J Ross. Yeager needs to stop being overprotective.
Yeah, that kind of fits into what Will was saying there, yep. too, about playing, you know, to your strengths. Or also, let's try it. What are you worried about? Let's see if Scal can guard Tatum. Let's be proven wrong first, maybe. Or, wow, that matchup's not working. But, all right, what's going to happen on the other end? Can you capitalize there? So, you know, I know there's a method to the madness. There's a reasoning behind a lot of this, but sometimes we can't see it when we're right in it. Maybe over time it'll look to pay off, but I don't know. That's where I'm hopeful, but I'm not seeing it at the moment.
Sometimes it's hard to tell the tone in text messages, so I'm going to read this one complete. I'm not for getting rid of the coach, not at all. We can't do that. But Yeager is the wrong coach for this squad. Absolutely wrong. Got to play the veterans. This shouldn't be a surprise with Yeager. Look at last year with Barnes.
Wait, gotta play the veterans.
Yeah,
he said?
But what I feel like is he's saying Yeager's gotta play the veterans.
Oh.
Whereas maybe someone else won't. I don't feel like that's the case though. I don't feel like it's just Dave Yeager who would play the veterans. I don't think you want to remove George Hill and Vince and Zach Randolph and certainly not Garrett Temple from this equation and just tell these guys to go out there. Look, you remove those guys. This is a D-League team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are guys who and don't take that the wrong way. These are guys that need to develop. These are a bunch of D-League players if you remove them. Now they're a professional basketball team, and you saw what happened when De'Aaron Fox started and had to run the point guard with a young group of players. Well, now you march Zach Randolph out there, you march Garrett Temple out there, and suddenly the flow of the game for him starting at the position is a little bit different.
Right.
And when things go wrong, well, guess who's there to clean it up and help him out? Garrett Temple.
Yeah.
So you need it. Like, you need it on the floor. He played much, much better. I hate grading on a curve. He was a disaster against Washington when he had to start and be at the point guard position. He starts with Garrett Temple. He plays a little bit better. Not just Garrett Temple, but Garrett Temple and Zach Randolph as well. He plays better than starting a group of all young players. You start a group of all young players for 82 games, you're going to get 70-some-odd games that look like that Washington game at Golden 1 Center a couple of weeks back. And come January, February, how many of those are you going to go to?
Right.
If they constantly look like that. These veterans serve a purpose, and I don't think that's just Dave Yeager's coaching style. I think that's any NBA coach's coaching style. We need to get these veterans in the mix. And while I absolutely am more with you in the sense guys like De'Aaron Fox, Bogdan Bogdanovic, I would love to see those guys play a lot more minutes, but I would prefer maybe Scal or Malachi or someone like that. Their minutes are scaled. Mm-hmm. Hey, Scal, you're going to run 6 to 10 minutes for the next couple weeks, the next six games. And then Bogdan, you're going to run 10 to 12 minutes after that, and we're going to run Scal for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Or you, I don't know, you intertwine. I don't know how it was. We've talked about this 1,000 times. Athletes are creatures of habits. When you're a Sacramento King right now, there are no habits.
Right.
Like, you can't establish a rhythm. You can go through your pregame routine. You can go through your pregame meal. You could do all that stuff as normal. You could see the same guys shooting around at the same time on the clock every single game. Those guys don't know what or if anything they're going to contribute to that night's contest.
Yeah, and I think the sooner they can get to that point where they get the consistency, it'll be better off. But they're just not there. And I think there's probably some pressure to play the young guys. I think Jaeger's probably more comfortable with the veterans. He's trying to mix both methodologies there, I guess. And I think that's been tricky on everybody.
So you got to pick one, right? Is that what you got to do something?
Yeah, or if it's even maybe, I think they can still do both, where you're playing young guys with veterans, but spread out the minutes a little bit longer, a longer run, and maybe instead of playing 10, make the difficult decision or 11 guys to trim it to 8 guys for about 2 weeks, and try that group where it's, you know, there's still Zach Randolph and there's still George Hill, but it's De'Aaron Fox, it's probably Scal, it's Buddy. And Bogdan, there's 4 of your, what you think probably at the very minimum right now is your youngest pieces of your core, and then your 4 to 5 veterans.
And there's always going to be, like, fans who won't like that.
Sure.
Because I just mentioned Frank Mason.
Right.
Frank Mason is actually one of the guys I'd really love to see play a string of 3 games at 30-something minutes, just because I'm so curious as to what this guy is.
Yeah.
Probably not going to. I don't think I'm going to get that this year. I may not get that for a couple of years, a string of games of Frank Mason playing 30-plus minutes, unless, you know, knock on wood, a couple of guys get hurt.
Right.
And that would have to probably be Garrett. That would probably have to be De'Aaron. That would have to be George Hill. It'd be a combination of those three before we ever saw Frank Mason play that type of minutes. But I'm very curious about how he would perform in that environment,
mm-hmm.
With that amount of time. With, hey, you're going to play regularly. That's it. You don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah.
You're going, and I just feel the mindset is different when you know I'm playing 30 minutes tonight. I've got to perform.
Yeah, and I also wonder, this goes to all sports. We talked about it earlier in football. I mean, were the Rams and the Eagles better off by just throwing Goff and Wentz into the fire? There's other teams that, you know, I remember way back when Steve McNair was the number one pick and they waited and didn't play him for a couple of years. I'm sure he learned some things. In the NBA, are you better off being thrown into the fire? Can you learn more from watching? Is the 40 minutes going against the other team's best going to help you? I think it's different on every player and every team, but this one's so unique in that they're trying to develop not just one player at a time. There's about 6 or 7 they're really working on.
And how much can you develop?
Right. And it's also, how quickly do we see it? Like, right now, it doesn't look like much has happened. But what are we going to be saying in February? Well, you know what? They are way better than October and November. That's what we hope, but that's what we're hoping for. I mean, I don't know what that'll bring.
A couple of texts here. Our ranking texter, Marty from Philly, says, you know they're tanking, right? How about this one? What's really bad is, even as a big-time Kings fan, I'm bored as hell watching this team. Just really, really bored. Even if they don't win, and he goes all caps on us, at least be somewhat entertaining. This team sucks with the veterans. There's a, weren't we excited when Vince Carter was signed and
yes.
Zach Randolph was
yes.
signed and George?
Yes.
Right. Okay. So mm-hmm. we're 9 games in. We're not excited anymore.
I guess not.
Okay.
For that. But then I also would say, to me, one of the toughest watch game this year was the game where, remember Washington, where they played basically all the young guys.
Mm-hmm.
That was a tough watch.
And it was never entertaining.
Yeah.
I mean, it was 13-0 before the first time out.
So I think all parties are guilty. I mean, we can look, but we almost give the benefit of the doubt to the young guys. Well, it'll get better because they're young. No guarantees of that.
Yeah, and that would be my next question. When has that happened?
Right.
Here.
Yeah.
When has that happened here? That's, I don't feel like that question is out of line.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, but it's going to happen now. It goes back to the question that I asked you at some point last week, you know, when we were talking about one of these losses again. It's keep hearing terms, upside. I'm so excited for the future. Why?
Yeah, and that's
just tell me why.
Yeah.
I want to be excited too.
Yeah, that's why I think that we, everybody, the individual, the team, and the fans need a game where one of their young guys goes off, whatever version of that is. And then you go, all right, that's a guy. That guy's going to be someone because I see it. I know he's capable of it. Or does it for a week or so where you go, man, Bogdanovich had a great week, or Frank Mason or whoever. All right, there you go. Now you build off of that, and that gets people excited. But they haven't had that yet.
Put you on the spot a little bit here with that scenario. Let's go with Justin Jackson because we're always talking about De'Aaron Fox. Let's say Justin Jackson goes for 32.
Okay.
32-10, just for fun.
Wow.
32-10. Kings lose by 19.
Okay.
Is that good?
His performance is, yes. The team performance, no.
Because we're running out of – I feel like we're running out of storylines. Because in 10 games, I don't want to have this conversation about veterans and young players anymore.
Well, we probably will.
I don't want to. We'll talk. Let's talk about something else.
Yeah.
I don't want to. I want to talk about something else. Give us something.
Right.
Whether it's Justin Jackson, whether it's De'Aaron Fox. Garrett, give us anything. Yeah. Willie, I don't care. Somebody do something.
And much like any other team, just one win will change the narrative, even if it's for 24 hours, 48 hours. Like if they beat the Thunder tomorrow, which I'm not picking them to do, but if they did, all right, you're feeling better. But that they need one. They need a win badly. Because it's the worst start since 1990, I believe, for them.
Is there another like one sport town? I like to call them. Like, how do you deal with when your team? Like, they're really bad. Like, they're just not good. Like, how do you pick the storylines? Because I just don't know how to make this stuff interesting.
Yeah,
and I struggle with. I tell you this daily. Like, what do we do? How do we attack this? That's why I said in 10 games, I don't want to attack the same angle of veterans versus young players.
Yeah, which is funny
because then we're almost a quarter way through the season in 10 games. Yeah. I mean, not quite, but close.
What's funny about this, the way it's happened, is because the season has started and we've already seen all the moves made, because I don't know that it necessarily feels that different as far as how they're playing when they traded DeMarcus, right? There's 25 games to go. Kings won the first game, pandemonium, everybody's excited. They lost 8 in a row. They had some clunkers in there. They were bad, but we also knew, okay, you've made the decision, you've dealt DeMarcus, you've got draft picks coming up, you've got a free agency period coming up. So all that was exciting to look forward to. We liked, seemingly, what they drafted, what they added as free agency. Now we're at the start of the season that we were excited for, and we see 1-8 and went, what's next? What's the next thing to be excited about? And right now, people aren't there.
Folsom Mike chimes in, not sure what fans expected with Vince and Zach. Have they not watched the NBA in the last 4 years? They're old. It is exactly what I thought they would be. Actually couldn't believe Vince still could dunk like he does. Zach Randolph has probably played better than anyone else on the roster over the course of the last few games. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't put him in that category. I think and that was my fear when Vince Carter signed here, is the highlights of him dunking from the dunk contest 15, 16 years ago. Yeah, that's not the guy. It's the guy. It's him. He's that person.
Yeah.
He's not that player anymore.
He's a three-point shooter.
He'll be the first to tell you.
Yeah.
It's not what he does anymore.
Yep.
Mike Evans suspended one game. We haven't really got into that. Mike Evans suspended one game. AJ Green, not suspended. We'll touch on that. We'll get back into the NFL. We'll talk some college football, our best and worst of the weekend as well, coming up here on Sports 1140. As we mentioned just a moment ago, Mike Evans, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, suspended for a game. AJ Green, not suspended at all. That's a good segue here to my worst of the weekend, Jay Ross, and it's Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston for a number of reasons. First of all, this doesn't factor in, but it's worth mentioning because it's news. The Bucs have shut AJ Green down for, quote, a few weeks.
Jameis, yeah.
Jameis, sorry. Mm-hmm. They have shut down Jameis Winston for the next couple of weeks. But the worst goes to him because he's the one who ignited the fight.
Definitely.
He acts like a 10-year-old and puts his – he acts like he's pointing at something but, like, pokes Marshon Lattimore's helmet. And Lattimore turns around and kind of pushes him away. And then Mike Evans comes in, like
– blindside.
And just drills Lattimore, and this whole scuffle takes place on the sideline there. But that was all Jameis Winston's fault. And his speeches suck.
His pregame one was weird.
Dude, talking about eating W's and licking his fingers, and his fingers come out shaped as a W. I noticed this during Hard Knocks, which I'm very angry at myself I'm worst of the weekend as well. I'm very angry at myself for buying into Jameis Winston during Hard Knocks because they made him look like gold.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that stood out were his speeches were really bad. Like, if you tried to give the show a pep talk before every, I'd be like, Jason, stop.
Yeah.
Like, if they sounded like that, hey, all right, let's get a W here for this show, and you're looking at it, be like, Jason, dude, this is weird, man. Knock it off.
Mm-hmm.
His speeches are terrible, and they're long-winded, and they bore me. I can't imagine what they do. That explains why his team sucks.
Yeah.
Because he's giving all these pregame speeches. Jameis Winston, on every front, is my worst of the weekend.
Yeah, and him and then Mike Evans, way worse to me than A.J. Green. A.J. Green wasn't a good look. It wasn't a good thing, but he at least was physically involved in the push and shove at first with Ramsey, and then his blood boiled. I mean, he lost it a bit. But Jameis started it. Evans tried to get in there and make it his, too. That was just bad. That was bad.
I mentioned A.J. Green not suspended, which him and Jalen Ramsey went at it.
They did. That was truly a fight.
That was there were a lot of them. There was, we mentioned the 49er Cardinal one that saw a number of ejections, including Carlos Hyde. There was this issue with the Bucks and the Saints. By the way, I don't want to bury all that. The Saints win again.
Six in a row.
Six straight. Mm-hmm. The last two teams that started 0-2 and then won six straight, the famous Emmitt Smith holdout Dallas Cowboys, they went on to win the Super Bowl, and the New York Giants that started 0-2, won six straight.
Yeah,
they went on to win the Super Bowl. Your New Orleans Saints are going to win the Super Bowl this year. It's science. it's science. You can't argue science.
Yeah, it's there. It's proven.
And it's worth pointing out though. There again. They're playing so good on both sides of the ball. But then there was the, you know, A.J. Green and Jalen Ramsey were going at it, and A.J. comes in with a full headlock and takedown and ground and pound. And, man, weird Sunday in the NFL. And then Julio Jones is dropping touchdown passes.
A couple of guys dropped easy touchdowns,
Yeah, but who there's only one Julio Jones.
Right.
And Julio looked that one right into his chest. And watch it bounce out.
I love the post game when they asked Matt Ryan about that. He's like, I'm not worried at all. He's made more plays. He's like, 100 times out of 100, he catches it. I'm like,
your math is off, buddy.
There's got to be one in there. And I'm with him. I mean, it can happen. It's weird. I have no explanation for it.
But you can't go 100 out of 100.
No, not when you did drop one.
You got to go. I mean, you can go 99.8.
Yeah.
Or 99.7.
Yeah.
If you don't want to go 99 because you're acknowledging that if you just went 99.9% of the time, boom, he catches it. You can't go 100, though.
No,
it doesn't work.
Seen the miss.
Again, it's science.
Right.
You can't argue science, Matt Ryan, who stinks, by the way. It's still science. Matt Ryan.
That team.
The Falcons are awful.
Yep.
Or not. They're not awful.
They're not awful, but they're not the Super Bowl representatives of the NFC.
Did we underplay Kyle Shanahan in Atlanta?
Well, maybe there, but we're not seeing it in San Francisco.
But I'm not faulting that because this team that team isn't talented.
Right.
I mean, what is the explanation for the highest rated offense last year? The NFC representative in the Super Bowl that no one was paying attention to until like week 15. Suddenly they can't put a string of wins together.
Well, and remember people were killing Shanahan for the second half of the Super Bowl. So they're killing him, but they think that he might have been the difference. I mean, there's can't have both.
So
and now they don't have him.
So now it all goes back to the second half of the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I was on like track for something and I lost it. So let's get to your best and worst of the week. I got ADD. I need to take a pill or something.
My best. I'm going to go back to Friday because I was talking about the Cavs and more specifically LeBron and just like struggling. And he brought out. Old school LeBron. LeBron went nuts. One of his best games he's ever had. 57 points on Friday night. And I just love when great players can ramp up and have a great night. And he certainly did last Friday.
Spoiler alert, he hit the free throw.
He did.
Got to 57. And they beat my Washington Wizards in the nation's capital.
And how'd they follow it up?
They lost to the Atlanta Hawks.
That's the NBA in 2017.
The one win.
Yeah.
Atlanta. The Cavs have lost to the Hawks, the Nets, and the Knicks this year. And the Knicks have suddenly, I think that was like a catapult for them.
Right.
The unicorn is scoring 40. He's doing one hand alley-oops, and they're winning ball games. Yeah, they're not good right now. And
no.
We'll talk more basketball. We'll talk more. There's
something going on.
Right?
Yeah, giving up way too many points. Way too many consistently.
I didn't watch the game yesterday until I found out they lost.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to go. It was a two-point game. It was like 117 to 115, I think, was the score. It was not close. They had a chance at the end, but they were down by like 18.
Man.
There's a lot of odd stuff there. Since you went positive with your best. And we'll get back to the NBA here in just a little bit. We got a lot of texts and tweets, too, regarding the Sacramento Kings that we'll get to here in the 2 o'clock hour. Also, things we got right, things we got wrong. We'll poke fun of ourselves a little bit. And overreactions, not just to the NFL, but to the weekend in sports. I think there's a lot of overreactions coming in regarding the Sacramento Kings. At least we'll have a discussion about what that may be. Best of the weekend for me, it's twofold. Jay Ross, you earn my best of the weekend. Not only do your Sac State Hornets win, but you mind tricked me into ordering UFC 217, which I had no interest in leading into our Friday Five on Friday. And you said to me, "You're going to be bored on Saturday. You're going to order it." I'm like, "No, well, I might, but no, I ordered it, and
it was great.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Three title fights." Three title changes. GSP is back. Georges St. Pierre, the funny thing about him is his fights aren't particularly entertaining. Like he is the like epitome of a mixed martial artist. He will try to win a fight even if it means it's slow and drawn out and boring. This fight was exciting. And all three, I wish Cody Garbrandt would have gotten the win for Sack, but TJ Dillashaw caught him with a clean shot and then I did not think Joanna Jędrzejczyk was beatable. At least right now, I did not think she was beatable. And Rose Namajunas not only beat her, but cut one of the great post-match promos of all time in which, hold on. I want you to. She just knocked out one of the most feared fighters in the UFC and said, "Hey, man, let's just hug.
Everybody
let's
hug.
Let's just hug.
Give each other a hug right now."
I love that.
Make the world a better place.
Such a winner.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Dude, a winner.
That was a big upset, right?
That was a yes. I thought Joanna Jędrzejczyk was not just one of I didn't think she was just the baddest women's fighter. I thought she was the baddest fighter that the UFC had left. With Conor out doing whatever he's doing, with Ronda gone, I thought she was the baddest they had left, and Rose just came in and took it from her.
What does St. Pierre coming back mean now? Like, is he – because it was 4 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is
four
he back
years.
In it? Like, or
no,
is
he's
this
back.
Just like a one-time thing? Or
he's back. He's a champion. No, he's back. He won a belt, and they have a star now, right? I don't know what Conor is doing moving forward, but GSP is a legit star. He's a legit I didn't feel the buzz around this, and man, it would be such a shame if this show doesn't have a good buy rate.
Yeah.
Because this was a really, really good show that if you watched it, you're going to get drawn in. If you watched it, you're going to get drawn to TJ Dillashaw. Unless you're in Sacramento, then you're not drawn to TJ Dillashaw. But you're drawn to Rose Namajunas. You're like, all right, GSP is big. Now we have someone to follow. I hope people ordered this because I didn't. You know, like we talked about Friday, I didn't feel like there was a buzz there at all. But the payoff, if you bought in, was really, really good. More best and worst coming in here on the text lines. We'll get to college football weekend. And some weird teams are leading their divisions in the NFL. We got that next.
Jay Ross just gave me a Jameis Winston-worthy pep talk there during
Let's
the
go!
Commercial.
Woo!
Did you do your worst of the weekend?
No, I didn't.
Would you like to?
Sure. My worst of the weekend, and I don't know if I've noticed it as much in other college football games, but it's happened a lot in the games that I call for Sacramento State in the Big Sky Conference. And I want to make sure I'm saying this correctly, but it's everything right now should be about safety. That's important. But targeting has become the rule, the flag of choice lately in the Hornet games, in other games that have affected the conference in a certain way. And when it's called, it immediately gets reviewed in the way it's, you know, in the way it's in the conference is if you're charged for targeting, if they confirm it, you're then ejected from the game. And if it's in the second half of a game, you're out that game in the first half of the next game. But it's happened a lot, and I feel like there should be a modification in the rule where you're still getting safety as your number one priority, but maybe start with personal foul. We're going to review with a chance to upgrade to targeting, because when it's called as targeting, now it's just like a turnover or anything you see in NFL where they have to prove it's not to take away that. And all of this to say, in a big game in the conference, Northern Arizona, who's leading the conference, is playing at Montana. And the quarterback of Northern Arizona, is one of the best players in the conference, got called for targeting.
I saw that.
And when I've seen the replay, on a legal block, a lot of times you got to get your body in front of the guy to be a clean block. So the block is good. He is taller than the defensive player, and he got called for targeting in the first half. They lost the game. There's no way to me they would have lost that game with him in there. It's just I don't like the rule. I don't like the way it's being applied. That's the way I should say it. And it's going on a lot. You could still have safety, but I think it's too quick. It's the thing they've overreacted to. So we're quickly going to do that and then targeting, and it's happening every week, multiple times in games, and it's tough.
Yeah, the NFL, they don't have a targeting rule, right? They have the defenseless receiver rule. Mm-hmm.
They don't have targeting?
Do they?
Or if they do, we don't see it as much because it feels like.
Maybe they do have target. Maybe it's not called targeting. But you're right. I feel like in college we hear it once a game.
At least.
We hear it a lot. We hear it once a Saturday at least, if nothing else.
And in slow motion or in fast motion, a lot of times it could be you have the ball, you're falling. I was already leaving to tackle you, and now by the time you've fallen, I've hit head-to-head, and it's like, yeah, by letter of the law, by definition, sure. But that's now slowing it down, whereas in fast time, I can't change my flight, you know, or how I was leaning in to tackle you while you were. So I don't know if they can find a way to have the balance and the safety or the fine balance where you have safety first, but also
not so extreme.
Yeah.
Let's use that as a segue into college football. You called it, and I'll give you this one. I thought you were ruining my weekend. Then I realized I just don't care that much because I know watching them, this team isn't that good. But you called the Buckeyes going to Iowa City and having a tough time. You didn't call the beatdown that they got, a 55-24 beatdown.
No.
But, wow. The Iowa over the course of the last, I think, is 4 years, are 4-1 against top 10 teams in Iowa City.
It was a terrible weekend for the conference.
Oh, yeah, they're out. They're gone. Big Ten is out of the playoffs. There's no, because I don't think Wisconsin's good enough to get in.
And wouldn't that be something if they ran the table and went undefeated, and whoever they played from the other division is going to have at least two losses, so it won't look as good, but it would be impressive nonetheless. An undefeated Big Ten team who we all thought so highly of the division could potentially be left out.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit more of a stretch. I think a lot of things would have to happen. I don't think they're going to go undefeated.
I don't either.
Is where I think that comes into play. But
the other scenario is a reality. They could go undefeated and be left out.
Sure, it very much is, because you got Miami is coming up on the show me part of their schedule.
Week, Notre Dame.
And an interesting video circulated out of Miami this weekend as well.
Yes.
Didn't really have much to do with football, but it certainly caught people's eyes. That's an amazing, amazing scenario that they – I understand it too, because I don't think Wisconsin is good enough.
Right.
I still believe Georgia didn't lose. All bedlam was fun.
Yeah, what was it, 76 points at half, 38-38? It was a little bit – well, I say a little bit calmer in the second half, but that was good. A lot of offense. Oklahoma is good. It's just, where is their defense?
62-52 was the final in that game, and that was regulation, by the way. Baker Mayfield, 598 yards. Again, 598 yards on 24 pass completions, 5 touchdowns. 2 interceptions.
Yeah, and a lot of people talked about, based on what Saquon Barkley's done the last 2 weeks, that maybe Baker Mayfield's moved ahead. I don't know. Those are just video game numbers, though. That's crazy.
Okay, since you mentioned Saquon Barkley, Penn State lost.
Yep.
Penn State lost. Miami won. The And Alabama did beat LSU, much to the chagrin of your Garrett Temple.
Yeah, and I feel like oh, they only won by 14. They won by 14. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
This isn't a stellar offense Bama team. We've seen their defense be so good that you just kind of ignore their offense. And then we've seen their offense be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a team that's – they're good.
Mm-hmm.
They're very balanced. It might be the most balanced in terms of they're not eye-popping here. They're not eye-popping here, but they're really good.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to the college football playoff rankings tomorrow night. I'm looking forward to see what they think about Wisconsin now that they're kind of the last man standing in terms of the Big Ten. How do they set up this with Penn State out, Ohio State out? How do they set up this this Notre Dame-Miami matchup this week? Like, how far do they bump Miami?
Yeah, because I feel like 1-4 probably won't change, but the 5-8, 9, the next tier is going to be interesting this week.
Yeah, with Miami beating, you know, they beat the number 13 team in the country. So it'll be a fun night tomorrow. And I'm telling you, that crazy weekend where we see team like 1, 2, and 3 all lose in the same weekend, I'm certain that's coming. We'll reset things. We'll get into some things we got right, wrong. We got overreactions coming up into the world sports. We got King's Talk on the way as well. Third and final hour of the Lowdown next.